Oh, yeah, you can smoke cigars indoors in this incrementally different universe. Kind of like this one. Sorta, but it's getting strange. It's just... Hi, folks, welcome. I'm James Lilacs, and this is The Diner. One of the infinite number of diners in this multiverse that I am traveling through. I'm sitting at my accustomed place at the long boomerang pattern for my counter at the diner on an old Highway 23, about 17 and a half minutes from where you happen to be right now. I timed it today. That much is the same in this incrementally different universe, or IDU, as I guess I'm going to call them now. If you are late to the whole thing, it seems that at the beginning of the year, when I found myself at the diner, I also found myself in an IDU, an incrementally different universe that was so much almost identical down to the last detail of the one that I know as reality, except that the songs in the jukebox were wrong, some brand names were off, there were some things that would tell anybody, I think, that he had entered a parallel dimension that just had minor differences to it. And then I got a note from somebody signed a friend, which of course made me instantly trust the person, saying that I should go back to the phone booth and dial a secret coded number, 555-1212, and that would get me home. But it hasn't yet. I find myself going from one IDU, incrementally different universe, to the next, and the differences are interesting, but it's starting to wear on me, and it's starting to make me wonder if I'm ever going to find the right home, and if I do, if I'll recognize it. For example, sometimes it's very clear when I've entered a place that is not my reality. And I've been to two since last we met. I drove home because I inhabit my physical form in this universe, whatever I happen to be, which makes me wonder that when my consciousness leaves, what does the person, the me, in that universe think then when I'm gone? Was it a dream? Did he just forget? No idea. Who can say? But I drove up to my house and... it didn't look so good. It's a sick tree in the yard. The window frames needed painting. There was a busted light fixture. And I thought, if I stick around this one, there's going to be a list every weekend that my wife is going to give me of things that have to be done. And it's just easier to go back to the diner and get in the phone booth and go to a place where maybe my weekend honey-do list might be a little bit shorter. And... now that I think about it, I should have thought about the guy I'm leaving behind. I should have stepped up to the plate. Even though it was winter, I should have called a painter and set a date for the spring. I should have called some contractors to fix a light fixture. I should have gotten all that stuff done and then left without, having to pay the bill. Leave that to him. But he'd be glad it was done. So, I mean, I should have, could have, whatever. But before I left, I took a shower. And I noticed that I had a fresh appendectomy scar, which, nice to know I got it out of the way, but in that incrementally different universe, is there an attack of appendicitis waiting for me down the road? Is that just a one-off? I don't know. So I ended up in this one, which seems okay, I guess. I mean, some of the brand names, again, are different. The ketchup, for example. I'm looking at the ketchup. We got the squeeze please bottles here in the counter, but I can see back in the kitchen there's a big, tub that they use to pour into the bottles, and the brand is Hunts and Heinz, because apparently here Hunts and Heinz merged. So I'm guessing that in this IDU, Hunts was the big brand. Otherwise, it would have been Heinz and Hunts, right? So it's Hunts and Heinz, which means that Hunts was the big one. But the fact that they could just jam these two brands together indicates to me something unusual. Each brand will have its partisans. You will have people who swear that Hunt's is better than Heinz. You will have people who swear that RC Cola is better than Shasta Cola or whatever. People choose their sides and become very intent on believing this fact about their favorite brands. Because there's differences, right? But if they can just jam Hunts and Heinz together, then they're sort of admitting that there's really no difference at all, is there? Or they're just saying that somehow this new ketchup would be a glorious synthesis, half of what made Hunts great and half of what made Heinz great. Put together, it would be Hunts and Heinz, a thing that surmounted the parts and became something new through a synthesis of ketchups. I tried it. It's just basically ketchup. There's also a third bottle. There's a white bottle There's, of course, the red bottle for ketchup. There's the yellow squeeze, please, for mustard. And for all I know, it's French and Plaquemines or something here. And then there's a garlic aioli. It's a French word, which is all vowels, right? Just like the French aioli. I'm holding it here in my hand, and it's not exactly refrigerated. And I kind of think that this mayo stuff needs to be refrigerated. So maybe this is an IDU where you don't have food poisoning at all. Or it's so instantly treatable with just a pill that people don't mind. Oh man, I got a little salmonella. I need a bromo. And then, you know, it's done and you're good. I don't know. I mean, I'm looking around, I'm reading the paper, you know, I'm driving slow, I'm looking at billboards, trying to figure out if there's anything else to this incrementally different universe except the fact that the ketchup companies merged. Because that would seem to just be an incredible waste of an entire multiverse. I assume, for example, that this phenomenon is not limited to Earth, that I'm in a completely different iteration of the universe, infinite, with hundreds of billions of stars. No, hundreds of billions of star clusters. Billions of galactic walls, huge filamental structures that tie it all together in a strange apparatus that we don't completely understand, but that in its own way seems to scale down to the very smallest things we can identify. If you look at a picture of how they presume the galactic walls to look, these huge superstructures that are immense beyond comprehension, they look like the filaments and the striations in the human eye, in the retina, and it makes you realize that the universe scales beautifully, and maybe perhaps in the end it all is an eye, unblinking, seeing all. And that every multiverse that I travel through is another version of that infinite vastness, that incomprehensible thing. But if the only difference in this entire thing is that there's ketchup companies that merged 10, 15 years ago and combined their brand, what a waste. I mean, I understand the whole thing that, that the multiverse thing would, everything that's possible happens and creates its own branching reality. But man, that's grossly inefficient. You'd like to think there's a minimum standard. Okay, all right. At the very least, there has to have been a period in Chinese history where they invented the car in 1740. I mean, something that would give it a novel taste, a real distinctive quality. But no, apparently all you can do is just merge your red condiments, and that's sufficient to make the multiverse different from the others around it. There has to be something else. It can't just be ketchup, can it? Well, what else is there? What else? Oh, well, at least this is the thing. Birch, my dog at home, recognizes me, which is good. I like that. He doesn't seem to be, you know... Don't dogs know? Don't they growl and say, you're a ghost, you're not this? No, he recognizes me, so that's good. Friends don't find anything unusual. My eyes aren't any better in any one of these things. That's what irritates me. My eyes are the same crappy eyes they've been since fourth grade. So there's got to be something else. Well, let me think about it for a while. In the meantime, I believe it's a moment for a musical interlude here, and as seems to be the case in almost every one of these things, the songs are kind of familiar, but they aren't. They're different. They're Hunts and Heights, let's put it that way. Let's go to J2.
Right. Well, anyway, I'm flying high tonight. I feel fine. I walk the line. Just getting a little Dickens here. Woo.
find it very, very easy to be true. But question is, to be true to who? 'Cause I ain't got no one to be true to.
Any offers? Thank you, waiting the bus.
Oh, blind, ring-a-ding-ding-ding. Yeah, Leroy, get your lick in. There's a winding road, it runs right by my shack. It was late last night when I started back, when the patrolman, he drove right up behind. I paid the fine, I couldn't walk the line. Leroy, you're hogging the show.
My dad had that song. Well, my version of it.
Classic country!
Thank you, Birthday White People's Chorus. Exactly right. That is, at least, my version in my world is classic country, Johnny Cash. And when I was a kid, I was fascinated by that song. My dad had that 45. And that humming at the beginning, it was like this invocation. It's like putting your ear up to a beehive of great intelligence and hearing them all singing the same note. It never occurred to me that he was doing that to find the note where he should come in and sing, which I think is what he was doing there. But it was just it was a very mysterious song, and his voice was very mysterious and grave. There was something about Johnny Cash that was different than all the other adult grown-up guys in Fargo, North Dakota. He wasn't like the nice man at the clothing store. He wasn't like the banker across the street. He wasn't like the guy down the street who ran the drugstore. There was something cast off and apart about him. You could tell in his voice. We didn't know what line he was walking either, but we could sort of imagine it. I actually envisioned a tightrope, which, in retrospect, is the sort of thing that a child would do. Imagining Johnny Cash, the man in black, strumming a guitar, singing that song, humming as he walked a tightrope. Later, my cousins would introduce me to other famous Johnny Cash hits like Boy Named Sue, which we all loved because he swore at the end of it. Well, they bleeped it. But, 'cause I'm the son of a beep that called you Sue. And we all actually thought that story was a great story. You know? I was pretty nice to that guy. He knew he couldn't stick around. Why? Why couldn't he stick around? Tell me that. But he departs for other places and names his kid. And apparently the name had to stick. The old rules were, if you are a man and you say your son is named Sue and then you leave, for the rest of his life he is required to be called Sue. But we were pretty sure there's a version out there that didn't bleep. What was the first song I ever heard on the radio that used a swear word? I think it may have been... Well, there's the rumors about the Frampton song, In Frampton Comes Alive, in the Do You Feel Like I Do, but no, he pretty much says, I want to thank you. Because it's the ultimate, it's the last song of the thing, and he says, I want to thank you. I think. But I think it was probably Steve Miller Band, Big Old Jet Airliner, where he expressed his disinclination to get messed up and involved in any of the funky tricks going down in the city. In the city. I'm sure that there were a great variety of funky tricks that were going down outside of the city as well. As a matter of fact, funky tricks themselves pretty much cannot be confined to any particular urban epicenter. I think you will find funky tricks existing in small towns as well. But he was absolutely right. There was the funky tricks of the big city do have a particular character, and I could see why he would want to get on a big jet airliner and leave them, in order to avoid entanglement. Let's see, what else do we have here in the jukebox today?
Fresh country morning.
Seems like it, yeah.
Well, I left home when the kid was three, and it sure felt good to be fancy free, though I knew it wasn't quite the fatherly thing to do.
Hold on a second here.
But that kid kept screaming and throwing up and pissing in his pants till I had enough. So just for revenge, I went and named him Sue.
What?
It was Gatlinburg in mid-July. I was getting drunk and getting by and getting old and going from bad to worse.
When through the door with an awful scream comes the ugliest queen I've ever seen, and he says,
"Hi, my name is Sue, how do you do?"
And then he hit me with his purse. Now this ain't the way he tells the tale, but he scratched my face with his fingernail. He bit my bum and kicked me with his high-heeled shoes.
I can be a tiger.
I punched him in the nose and he started to cry. He threw some perfume in my eye. Sure ain't easy fun with a boy named Sue.
I can be an animal.
Okay, all right. You know, it makes me think of the toughest Sue I ever knew, who was a fry cook lesbian boxer at the Valley. And I don't know which order to put those things in. I don't know exactly which defined her the most, but that's how I remember her. Pretty good boxer, too, from what I remember. But she was at the center of a variety of romantic entanglements with some of the other waitresses there, all of whom apparently had their heart broken by Sue in turn. Well, one night, one of them came to our house looking for, what was her name? Anna. Anna, one of the waitresses, one of the more cheerful waitresses at the Valley, drank a ton. Smoked Merit menthols. In the house in Dickeytown, the bottom floor was occupied entirely by hockey players who played head east and drank a lot of beer. Upstairs was the artistic quarters, don't you know? We had Chris, who was a dancer, his wife, who I don't know what she did, frankly, but she was vaguely artistic. Wesley, who was a filmmaker. Myself, the writer. The professor and Maria, and a grifter named Steve, who skipped out on his rent eventually and was just the kind of guy you knew who'd be selling stereos out of the back of his car and always had an angle and a deal. Remember one night when Wesley got a little hopped up on joy juice and for the fun of it was ripping up checks from an account that was no longer valid because it had no money in it, and Steve was appalled that somebody would rip up checks because those, you know, you could use those for money until they caught up with you, man. But he was gone, and Anna was in his space, and then the waitress who had been jilted came drunk to our door and wanted to speak to Anna, and Anna wasn't there, and I asked her, what was the matter? I mean, I worked at the Valley, too. I was sort of privy to all of the gossip that went on in that great restaurant, and she talked about her heartbreak with Sue and said, "I'm shattered." And she said it in a way that made me think, well, obviously she's referring to the Rolling Stone tune. Because Shattered had just come out and was on interminable rotation at the Valley downstairs in the pub, and so that was the word of the time. So when she said that she was shattered, in a way that was meant to call to mind the Rolling Stone song, I felt as if I should say Shadoobie, but I didn't. I didn't. You know, it's odd. I don't know her name. I can vaguely remember what she looks like. I just remember that she came to the door drunk and said that she was shattered. That's the entirety of my memory of this person, who, for all I know, went on to live a perfectly happy life and is out there somewhere now, completely having forgotten Sue entirely. But I remember. I remember. It's odd what you do and what you don't. It makes me wonder also if I leave imprints behind in the IDUs, if memories that happen to me happen to somehow stay with the person that I left. Because, I mean, think about it. Here are these things firing in my head, these neurons assembling various thoughts and recollections and however the brain works. If the file system metaphor no longer works and it's really actually something else, whatever it is, maybe when I leave, the person has those residual memories and my life will occur to them over and over in a series of dreams. Which would be pretty boring because I've not led a tremendously exciting life. So I'm sorry to myself in this IDU that I'm leaving you with dreams of people coming to the door drunk and hiccuping and quoting Rolling Stone songs from their comeback period, of which they've had quite a few. I'm going to wash my hands and splash my face right now, so if you don't mind, I'm going to go to the restroom. And, of course, that means we will now have a word from one of our sponsors. Shadoobie.
Smokers, it pays two ways to smoke Raleigh cigarettes. It pays with top-quality smoking enjoyment. It pays with luxury premiums.
Yes, magnificent premiums, each the finest of its kind. Lovely Oneida community silverware. Handsome inlaid coffee tables by Castlewood. Gotham gold-striped nylon hosiery. Schick super-electric shavers and more than 50 others.
And you can have any of these beautiful premiums simply by saving the premium coupons you get with Raleigh cigarette. And remember,
Raleigh premiums are made possible by reduced advertising expenditures and by accepting a smaller profit than the usual rate for the cigarette industry. Thus, the Raleigh Premium Plan is a profit-sharing plan. Raleigh premiums are a bonus to the Raleigh smoker.
Yes, it pays two ways to smoke Raleigh cigarettes. It pays with top-quality smoking enjoyment. It pays with luxury premium.
So get the pack with the premium coupon on the back. Raleigh cigarettes.
Exactly how to eat an Oreo. Well, to do it, you unscrew it very fast. 'Cause a kid will eat the middle of an Oreo first and save the chocolate cookie outside for last.
See? There's so much frosty cream between.
Aren't Oreo kids lucky? Aren't Oreo mothers wonderful?
'Cause a kid will eat the middle of an Oreo first and save the chocolate cookie outside for last.
You know, I think I remember that Oreo commercial from the early 70s, I believe, with the insufferable, soft-voiced, strumming troubadours singing about, "Do you know how to eat an Oreo cookie?" Yes, yes, I think we do. I think we all do. It's not that difficult. It's not like there's some timer ticking down to zero as you decide whether or not you twist the top part off first or the bottom part. It's a cookie. Eat the cookie. But the voiceover, "Aren't Oreo kids lucky?" Yeah, I'd say so. "Aren't Oreo mothers wonderful?" Implication being, you're an Oreo mother, aren't you? Because you're wonderful. But if you're not an Oreo mother, interesting. Tell us about that. Explain yourself. Because obviously you don't want to be wonderful. You don't want to make your kid lucky. What's the matter with you, bitch? It's a nice piece of little Madison Avenue soft sell there, don't you think? Well, I think I have time for one more tune before I head on out of this diner in this IDU and see what else might be different in this world besides consolidated ketchup. Let's go to J1.
Mom wanted a boy, but she got me. And ever since then, it's been misery. 'Cause when somebody asks me who I am, they always laugh when I tell them I'm Sam. All my life, I've lived in shame. I wonder why Mom ever gave me that name. But then one day, with a howdy do,
"Hello, Sam, my name is Sue."
With a voice as soft and as meek as a lamb, I said, "Hello, Sue, my name's Sam." As time went by, there were lots of laughs from the folks in town and the kids in class. But we didn't care, and we paid them no mind, 'cause my love was his'n and his'n's mine. Now we had to fight, but we saw it through. Just a girl named Sam and a boy named Sue.
In case you're curious, nomenclature does not indicate gender dysphoria.
Well, we got married and we settled down in a little white house at the edge of town, with a patio and a swimming pool, and not too far from the grammar school. At the end of our drive, right next to the street, stands our mailbox, and it looks so sweet. And would you believe it's painted blue? With our names, just Sam and Sue.
Which confuses no one. No one.
Nobody knows or understands why he answers to Sue and I to Sam. They don't know what we go through. A girl named Sam and a boy named Sue. But we'll hang in there and we'll stick it out. Then one day we'll proudly shout, "The baby's here, but what'll he do with a mother named Sam and a daddy named Sue?" Well, we don't know, and it's a shame, but the kid's gotta have some kind of a name. So we figured out what we're gonna do. We're gonna name our baby Sue.
Hello.
Just name the child Newt for gender neutral. I mean, Newt was a name of a little girl in the Aliens movie, so that'll work. What was the problem with this woman? If her mother really, really hated the fact that she had a girl and wanted a boy, she named her Sam as in Samantha, maybe? I know. Could be Samantha. I don't know why. But I'm glad Sue met Sam and they figured it out. And yeah. While that song was playing, though, I was curious about why there doesn't seem to be any actual Johnny Cash Boy Named Sue songs in this incrementally different universe. And so I went to Goohoo, and that's what it's called here as well, and looked it up. And, well, there's an entry for Johnny Cash, all right. Yeah, there's an entry. Johnny Cash was electrocuted in the electric chair in California in 1961, apparently. He had certainly the reason he has a Wikipedia entry is that he did have a sort of reputation as an up-and-coming country music star based on some demos that he cut. But before anything was done, before he actually went to the studio to polish his work, he went to Reno and shot a man just to watch him die, as the song has it, and was caught subsequently and sent to San Quentin and subsequently executed. So there's just no Johnny Cash music anywhere outside of that. The early tapes that he auditioned with, long lost. So, well, you got to balance these things out, I suppose. On one hand, the catch-ups in this incrementally different universe are consolidated. On the other hand, there's no Johnny Cash. I'm not sure it's worth it sticking around. I don't know, maybe all the differences in this IDU are simply commercial consolidations. You know, Tabasco merged with Bosco. Chocolate sauce for milk to form Tabasco. And I don't know why I thought of that. Oreos obviously are intact, according to that commercial. Although that was an old commercial, it sounded like. Maybe Oreos exist on one side of the country and it's Hydrox on the other. Maybe it's Schilling on the east and McCormick on the west. Or is it the other way around? McCormick on the west and Schilling on the east. I don't know. It doesn't seem to be enough of a reason to stick around. No? I don't think so. See, I'm at the point right now where I can travel between IDUs with such ease that if I get back into my car and drive somewhere and I see that the check engine light is on, it's like, oh, man, I don't have to deal with this. I don't have to look at this. I don't have to, you know, put a piece of tape over it or go and get my oil changed. I'm just going to go in the phone booth and dial the magic number and go to another dimension. Strange things with these powers do to you. Anyway, thanks for dropping by, folks. I'm glad you could join me here at the diner, and we'll do it again next week. I'm James Lilex, and this has been The Diner, and I will see you down the road.
I can be a tiger.